Good morning. It's good to see everybody here. Really good that Racine and Mark and April can be here. Sorry to hear about Jeff's back. And this morning's lesson was kind of brought about from our study on euphemisms. We went through every passage in the New Testament that deals with Christian speech. And one of the things that was said in Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 29, Stephanie latched on to, and I credit her with the idea for the lesson this morning. And that is, I'll go ahead and read it in verses 29 through 32. Let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying, that it may minister grace unto the hearers. And grieve not the Holy Spirit of God, whereby you are sealed unto the day of redemption. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. And be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake has forgiven you. So I'd like to thank Joshua for the song we just sang, because that put us kind of in the right tone, for a frame of mind here for the lesson. Angry words, let them never, and then all the things that angry words can do to relationships and to life and to friendships. And so, but verse 29, it says that it may minister grace to the hearers. And that phrase resonated with Stephanie, and she's the one who latched onto it initially. And the kids get squabbling with each other, and she's like, guys, grace to the hearers. And I didn't have the same takeaway on euphemisms that I don't know how everybody took that. I stand pretty much where I started, that as far as euphemisms go, having read every passage in the New Testament talking about it, I didn't read anything about euphemisms. So there's a lot of things that I did read about. And this one thing that really, that I took away from that study, and that this morning is really what I'm passing on, is our dealing with each other, from our brethren to the world around us, to worldly relations and friendships, to those who treat us poorly. There's a lot to be said in the New Testament on how we should speak to one another. And so Christian speech is to be that which is good to the use of edifying, so that it may minister grace to the hearers. Now, just that statement, grace to the hearers, what in the world does that mean? What is that? What does grace to the hearers mean? And really, I think in order to get the answer to that, you have to look at the rest of the verse. Let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying, so that it may minister grace to the hearers. So what is corrupt communication? In order to really understand this grace to the hearers, we got to get a feel for what it's not. It's the opposite of corrupt communication. And if you look at the word corrupt, it's the same word that we have for corrupt today. It's not technically dealing with cussing. I've heard people use this passage to say you Christians can't cuss, which we'll get there in a minute. But corrupt means rotten. That's what this word is. It's how we use the word corrupt. It's a synonym for rotten. Have you ever heard somebody say something that's just a rotten thing to say? How about name calling? There's a lot of things on this list. So I want to look at a few things here, some definitions from the scriptures that are rotten things to say. In Romans chapter 8 and verses 13 to 23, actually, that is not Romans 8, that should be Romans 11, I believe. Yeah, that should be Romans 11. I don't know why I have I don't know why I have Romans 8 on the board there. That should be Romans 11, 13 to 23. For I speak to you Gentiles, inasmuch as I am the apostle of the Gentiles, I magnify my office, if by any means I may provoke to emulation them which are of my flesh, and might save some of them. For if the casting of them, for if the casting away of them be the reconciling of the world, what shall the receiving of them be but life from the dead? But if the first fruit be holy, the lump also is holy, and if the root is holy, so are the branches. And if some of the branches be broken off, and you being a wild olive tree were grafted in among them, and with them partake of the root and fatness of the olive tree, do not boast against the branches. But if you boast, you do not bear the root, but the root you. Will you say then, the branches were broken off that I might be grafted in? Well, or true, but of unbelief they were broken off, and you stand by faith, do not be high-minded, but fear. For if God spared not the natural branches, take heed lest he also not spare you. Behold therefore the goodness and severity of God on them which fell, severity, but toward you goodness, if you continue in his goodness, otherwise you shall be cut off. And they also, if they do not abide still in unbelief, shall be grafted in, for God is able to graft them in again. And he goes on this concept. But he said, don't boast against the branches. The boasting specifically that he's talking about here is, ha-ha, you were broken off so that I might be grafted in. The Gentiles may think of themselves that they ought to boast against the Jews because the Jews were cut off to make room for them. And so what he says is, now wait a minute. If God cut those branches off and they were the natural branches, what makes you think that he's going to keep you just because you were grafted in? So what Paul is telling them is boasting in this manner is a rotten thing to do. Can we do the same thing as Christians and boast against the world? Ha ha, I'm saved and you're not. Ha ha, I'm a better person than you. Yeah, we can. And we ought not to. That's a rotten thing to say. That kind of boasting should not be. But boasting and bragging in general is talked about exceedingly through the Psalms and the Proverbs as a bad thing. Bragging is not good. It's a rotten thing to do. It's a rotten thing to say. There was a commercial years ago with Brett Favre, and I had to look it up because I couldn't even remember what it was about. It's a MasterCard commercial, apparently, but he's walking down the street, and things are going poorly all around him, and he's commenting on how he would have done a better job if it had been him. There's a father scrubbing the chocolate ice cream off his son's white sweater, and he's like, I would have used vanilla with that sweater. And everything he passes by, he's got some comment, some snide comment to just throw in there. I'd have done it better if it were me. And last thing of the commercial, someone crossing his path, there a bag of groceries breaks out and goes all over the sidewalk. And as the commercial fades to black, you hear, I'd have double bagged it. That's a form of bragging. That's a form of boasting. It's a rotten thing to say. Is there a reason to comment and say how you'd have done it better if it had been you, if you were there, if you were the parent, if you were the one carrying the bag? No. The general idea that's being portrayed there, even in that mindset, is I never make mistakes. I don't do anything wrong because when I do it right. Is that true? No, no matter who you are, that's not true. So this form of boasting, any kind of boasting, is a rotten thing to say. And I think that was the point of the commercial. But next, jumping to conclusions, and I have Job in italics there because we're not going to read the whole book of Job, but in the whole book of Job, you have his friends and his wife and everybody around him is jumping to the conclusion that Job is living in sin and that he must have done something terrible to have all these things happen to him. But if you will, turn with me to 1 Samuel because there's a much shorter example of somebody jumping to conclusions. 1 Samuel chapter 1 and verses 12 to 17. This is a barren woman and she is longing for a child and she's pouring out her soul to God and saying, if I can just have a child, I will devote his life to God. And Picking up in verse 12, and it came to pass as she continued praying before the Lord that Eli marked her mouth. Now, Hannah, she spoke in her heart, only her lips moved, but her voice was not heard. Therefore, Eli thought she had been drunken. And Eli said to her, "How long will you be drunken? Put away your wine from you." And Hannah answered and said, "No, my lord, I am a woman of a sorrowful spirit, and I have drunk neither wine nor strong drink, but have poured out my soul before the Lord. Do not count your handmaid for a daughter of Belial, for out of the abundance of my complaint and grief have I spoken in this way." Then Eli answered and said, "Go in peace, and the God of Israel grant you your petition that you have asked of him." So you see that it humbled Eli. Eli is the high priest. But he sees this woman, her lips are moving, but no sound's coming out. And he jumps to the conclusion that she's drunk. And so he goes and he chews her out for being drunk. How many of us have been here? How many of us have had a similar experience where you thought something was a particular way and you commented on it or said something about it and then realized that it was not anything like what you thought? So you see that you can see Eli's response. He was humbled by it and he said, "Oh, well, in that case, God grant you your request." And so, but we've all been there. We've all had some case, something happened. We saw something and we mistook it and thought it was something that it wasn't. And we say something, and usually it's the wrong thing because we thought we saw something that we didn't. And it does not bring grace to the hearers. In 1 Timothy chapter 5, we see another common problem, and I've seen this problem tear churches apart. And in 1 Timothy chapter 5, verses 11 to 15. "But the younger widows refuse, for when they have begun to wax wanton against Christ, they will marry, having condemnation because they will cast off their first faith. And withal they learn to be idle, wandering from house to house, and not only idle, but tattlers also, and busybodies, speaking things which they ought not. I will therefore that younger women marry, bear children, guide the house, and give no occasion to the adversary to speak reproachfully, for some are already turned aside after Satan." So he's giving instructions that widows ought to be paid of the treasury. And he says the younger widows don't allow that, because if they have everything supplied for them, every need supplied, they're going to be idle. And as the old saying goes, idle hands do the devil's work. They're going to become gossipers and busybodies in other people's affairs. And I have seen gossip just ruin people's lives. I've seen it personally. I've experienced it personally. And so usually gossip starts with the other one, jumping to conclusions. Jumping to conclusions, and instead of going to the person, what if Eli, instead of going to Hannah and saying, "Hey, why are you drunk?" What if he went and told somebody else, "Hey, I saw the wife of Elkanah drunk and mumbling incoherently"? If he had spread the tale before he talked to her, that's all gossip is. That's how easy it is. You jump to a conclusion, you pass that conclusion on to somebody else. And even if you find out and you get corrected, you were wrong, the damage is already done and you've already told who knows who. And so that's the problem with the jumping to conclusions thing in the first place. But the second problem is passing that on to other people. And once it's spoken, once the words are out of your mouth, you can't take them back. And so Paul highlights this other problem of gossip and tale-bearing. And then Ephesians chapter 5, and this is actually connected to what we read in chapter 4. We ended in 32 of 4. And this is the continuation of that same thought. All right, Ephesians 4 and beginning in verse 1. All we're doing is picking up where we left off with what Paul was saying. And we'll read through verse 4. "Be therefore followers of God as dear children, and walk in love as Christ also loved us and has given himself for us an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling savor. But fornication and all uncleanness and covetous, let it not be named among you, as become saints, neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor jesting, which are not convenient, but rather giving thanks. So he talks about this foolish talking and jesting. He's talking about crude jokes, crude humor. When I was in the oil field, there was a lot of this. And it was hard to avoid it. People would take the slightest thing you said and turn it into something gross. And it didn't matter who you were or how innocent what you said was. They can turn anything into something gross if they're looking to. And then it becomes a joke and everybody's laughing about it. And it's not funny. Christians are not to participate in that. And sometimes, in its own twisted way, it is funny. And you have to refrain from showing any sign of thinking it's funny, because otherwise they're just going to run with that too. So this can be a really hard one. You can get sucked in, and you can get roped in. There's that jumping to conclusions again. People who hear it going on and see you in the middle of it just assume that you're in the middle of it. And you could be just going about your business doing your job. So sometimes that's a hard one to avoid, getting roped into, but we can sure be the ones to prevent it getting started in the first place. We can choose not to participate or get it going. And then if we back up in Ephesians 4, to verse 25, we'll read back up through 31 again. Wherefore, putting away lying, let every man speak truth with his neighbor, for we are members one of another. Be angry and sin not. Do not let the sun go down upon your wrath, neither give place to the devil. Let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands the thing which is good, that he may have to give to him that needs. Let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying, that it may minister grace to the hearers. And do not grieve the Holy Spirit of God, whereby you are sealed unto the day of redemption. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. So you have wrath and malice. Look how many times wrath and malice came up in that short passage. Wrath and malice were there a lot. The hardest time to administer grace to the hearers is when you are angry. It's the hardest time to say something that you mean and something that you don't mean. Because when you're angry, you say things that you don't mean and that you never would have thought had you not been angry. And that's why Paul says, be angry, but do not sin. Be angry, but do not sin. This is it's a really hard thing to do, and I think that's why wrath and malice are listed over and over in this passage. I saw wrath come up at least 3 times, and then you have malice in there too. You don't always have to have malice at heart to say a rotten thing, do you? There's the boasting, and there's jumping to conclusions. Gossip is usually accidental. You don't necessarily have to have malice to do these things, but when you are feeling malicious, when you're angry about something, then that malice slips in, and then you are apt to say something that you didn't mean or something that you shouldn't have. You certainly don't administer grace to the hearers when you're angry. And so that kind of helps us understand what Paul is talking about when he contrasts grace to the hearers, that which is good to the edifying, with corrupt communication, the rotten thing to say. It's a contrast. So you take all these things that are rotten things to say, rotten things to do, and you do the opposite, and you have that which is good that may be edifying. What is edifying? That's building somebody up. That's making somebody feel good. That's taking somebody out of a slump. Angry words, jumping to conclusions, gossip, boasting, that can make somebody feel bad all by itself. And again, Stephanie's normal usage of grace to the hearers is when the kids are fighting with each other. And when you try to take a step back and you think about people fighting with each other, people in general, not just children, but when people are having an argument, normally it makes an awkward tension that can be cut with a knife, right? When people are arguing and having a knockdown, drag out fight verbally, when you have that going on, that verbal battle, everybody who can hear it has this awkward silence. Is this real? What? Are you joking or are you serious? You have this awkwardness when that's going on, and so it doesn't bring any grace to anybody who's listening. Then you have this evil speaking that was at the end there in verse 31. He said, evil speaking, let it be put away from you with all malice. And on the list of the evil speaking, I've got two things that come to mind. One is the lying that we didn't really focus on while talking about a rotten thing to say. But in verse 25 again, chapter 4 there, he says, wherefore, putting away lying, speak every man the truth with his neighbor, for we are members one of another. Lying isn't something that you generally think a Christian would even have a problem with. But there are people, Christians are still people, there are people who struggle with lying. And once you start struggling with it, it's going to be a struggle. And so, yeah, there are lots of Christians who have this to battle. There are some Christians that it never even crosses their mind. They're going to tell the truth no matter what. And that's the way we'd all like to be. But there are Christians who struggle with lying. Sometimes the first thing that comes to mind is the lie instead of the truth. Usually from something in the past that keeps coming back. But then there's cussing. And I had a Christian friend tell me once that there's a time and a place for cussing. If you use cussing correctly, then you can let people know that you mean business. And I'm thinking, well, how do you use cussing correctly from a biblical standpoint? But if we turn to 1 Peter 2, you find this same phrase, the evil speaking, in verses 1 and 2 in 1 Peter chapter 2. Wherefore, laying aside all malice and all guile and hypocrisy and envies, let all evil speakings as newborn babes desire the sincere milk of the word, that you may grow thereby. That you have a couple of things there, the guile and evil speakings can both be dealing with cussing, as we would call it today. So how do you use cussing correctly? What's the biblical usage for cussing? I think you probably know. No, there is a biblical reason for cussing. There is. We're going to look at it together here. In Matthew chapter 26, there is a biblical reason for cussing. And I think you probably already know it if you think about it. Beginning in verse 69, we'll read through the end of the chapter. But Peter sat without in the palace, and a damsel came to him, saying, you also were with Jesus of Galilee. But he denied before them all, saying, I do not know what you say. And when he was gone out onto the porch, another maid saw him, and said to them that they were there, this fellow also was with Jesus of Nazareth. And again he denied with an oath, I do not know the man. And after a while came unto him they that stood by, and said to Peter, surely you are of them, you are one of them, for your speech betrays you. Then he began to curse and to swear, saying, I do not know the man. And immediately the cock crowed. Okay, so look at the escalation here. You have first, somebody comes and they say, you were with Jesus, and he says, no, I wasn't. You have just straight lie, straight denial, nothing to go with it. Then in verse 72, he denied with an oath. So remember, Jesus talked about swearing by, don't swear by heaven because that's God's throne, don't swear by the earth because that's God's footstool. And they had this thing where if you swore by the temple, then it was okay to break that swear. But if you swore by the gold of the temple, why, that was really bad. So you have Peter, no, I swear by the gold of the temple. I don't know him. And so he says with an oath, I don't know him. And then the third time, when they came to him and they said, your speech betrays you. What I see in Peter's response is, you want to see speech? I'll give you speech. They're talking about his accent, how he says his words. But it's like he said, you want to hear speech? I'll give you speech. Listen, you blankety blank, I don't know him. And he begins to curse and to swear. So the biblical reason for cussing is to show people that you don't know Christ. Understand that. That's the biblical reason. That's using cussing correctly. From a biblical standpoint, if you're using cussing correctly, it doesn't tell people you mean business. It tells people you don't know Christ, because this is the only example I know of somebody using cussing for anything in the Bible. And so this is the biblical reason. He uses it to prove, he's offering it up as evidence, I don't know Christ. So understand that the proper usage, the biblical usage of cussing, is to explain to people and to prove to people that you don't know Christ. Just remember this passage. Because there's no other correct usage of cussing. This is what it's used for in the Bible. To show people that you don't know Christ. And I'll tell you, people take it the same way today. It's used in the same way. The world recognizes when you cuss that you don't know Christ. The world sees you as one of them. I had coworkers when I worked in the oil field that their goal in life was to get me to say a cuss word. They tried really hard. It's not going to work. I just don't talk like that. But because they wanted to see that I'm one of them, they're looking for acceptance that they're okay. And so it's the same today. It works in the exact same way. The world recognizes that if you speak that way, you don't know Christ. And so it's a very important thing that when we speak, when we deal with one another, when we deal with the world around us, that we minister grace to the hearers. In Colossians chapter 4, we see something very similar to what was said in Ephesians. But just a tad bit different. In Colossians chapter 4 and verses 2 through 6. Continue in prayer and watch in the same with thanksgiving, with all praying also for us that God would open unto us a door of utterance to speak the mystery of Christ, for which I am also in bonds, that I may make it manifest as I ought to speak. Walk in wisdom toward them that are without, redeeming the time. Let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer every man. So what's this seasoned with salt? What's Paul talking about this time? He says, let your speech be grace, seasoned with salt. So it's not good enough that we speak good and edify and administer grace to the hearers and not have that awkward tension from people fighting with each other all the time. That's not good enough. Seasoned with salt, he's talking about the gospel. Look at the context. He says that he's in prison, but at the same time, he's always praying that Christ would open to him a door so that utterance could be given to him to speak the mystery of Christ, for which he's in bonds. He says, I wish that I could get opportunities to speak the gospel. So the grace seasoned with salt, it's not good enough to just talk about moral character. It's not good enough to just edify and build people up. You can't teach the teachings of the Lord without also teaching the Lord of the teachings. You can't do it. It doesn't work. You've got to have Christ in your speech. You've got to have the gospel in your discussions. If you don't, then you can't truly bring grace to the hearer. we are to bring grace seasoned with salt. He's borrowing from Jesus' phrase, you are the salt of the earth. Salt that's lost its savor has become useless. That's what he's doing. He's borrowing from that. And he says, when you speak, let it be grace seasoned with salt, seasoned with the gospel. Slip the gospel into your speech. And don't let an opportunity to speak about Christ slip by. And if you'll turn to Matthew chapter 5, this is the most difficult, simple instructions that I've ever heard. Everything is laid out so succinctly, so simply, so easy to understand, and this is the most difficult thing to do that we're about to read about. So Matthew 5 and verses 43 through 48. You have heard that it has been said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. Well, isn't that so much easier to do than what Jesus is about to say? We all know what comes next. Love, he says, you've heard it said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. Well, that's pretty easy. I can do that. But listen to what Jesus goes on to say. But I say to you, love your enemies. Bless them that curse you. That's really hard. When somebody's angry with you, when somebody's saying all the wrong things to you, when somebody is not bringing grace to your ears, it is really hard to return a blessing. He doesn't say be silent, does he? Being silent is easier than returning a blessing. He says, bless them that curse you. Do good to them that hate you and pray for them that despitefully use you and persecute you. Those who truly and utterly wish you harm, pray for them. Should we not be praying for the Muslims? They truly wish us harm. But if they would turn to Christ, would they wish us harm anymore? No, problem solved. So we should be praying for them rather than looking for a way, wishing them harm. Boy, when after September 11, almost everybody I talked to, even Christians, were saying, yeah, we should just turn that country to glass. Really? These are people. Yeah, they wish us harm, but can Christians talk like that? These are our enemies. They hit us. We should just turn that country to glass. Turn that whole area to glass. Why? These are people. Can Christians talk like that? Should Christians talk like that? Can Christians talk like that? No. You can't. We can't. And the next verse, so that, this is why you do this. Pray for them to despitefully use you and persecute you, so that you may be the children of your Father which is in heaven. For he makes his sun to rise on the evil and on the good, and sends his rain on the just and on the unjust. For if you love them that love you, what reward do you have? Do not even the publicans the same? I tell you, don't the Muslims love them that love them? Don't even the terrorists who wish to destroy us love them that love them? Yeah, you bet they do. Jesus says you're to be better than that. You're to be above that. He says, what reward should you have? Don't the publicans do the same? And if you salute your brethren only, what more do you do than others? Do not even the publicans the same? Be therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect. These instructions are so simple, they're so clear, they're so succinctly laid out there. But this is the hardest thing in the world to do. I can't tell you how many times I got roped into those conversations about turning the country to glass. Because it's easy to do. Especially when you're angry, when things are not going your way. But that's not how a Christian can be. That's not how a Christian can talk. If we want to be the children of our Father, we have to do what Jesus said here. Love those who hate you. Love those who truly wish you harm. Bless those who are cursing you. It's not good enough to just be silent and walk away. Return a blessing for their curse. This is the hardest thing in the world to do. And so to wrap this up, really, James sums up just about everything I just said in James chapter 3. And we'll just read the entire chapter and then close, because this chapter is dealing with the tongue and how the words that you say can impact those around you. And he says, "My brethren, be not many masters." He's talking about being teachers. "Knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation. For in many things we offend all. If any man offend not in word, the same is a perfect man, and able to bridle the whole body. Behold, we put bits in horses' mouths, that they may obey us. And we turn about their whole body. Behold also the ships, which though they be so great, are driven of fierce winds, yet they are turned about with a very small helm, whithersoever the governor lists. Even so the tongue, which is a little member, boasts great things. Behold how great a matter a little fire kindles." What forest fire started with a blaze? They don't. Usually it's a single spark. Usually that's all it is, a spark. So he says, how great a fire is kindled by a little fire. "And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members, that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the whole course of nature, and it is set on the fire of hell. For every kind of beast and of birds and of serpents and of things of the sea is tamed, and has been tamed of mankind. But the tongue can no man tame. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. Therewith we bless God, even the Father, and therewith we curse men, which are made after the similitude of God." There's that, we should just turn that country to glass. Who are we talking about? People who are made after the similitude of God. Can we be that way? James says, no, you can't do that. "Out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not so to be. Does a fountain send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter? Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries? Either a vine, figs? So can no fountain both yield salt water and fresh? Who is a wise man and endowed with knowledge and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conduct his works with meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, do not glory and do not lie against the truth. This wisdom descends not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. For where envy and strife is, there is confusion and every evil work. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, then gentle, and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace." So James opens up talking about the tongue and the things that people say, and then he closes with the heart, because that's where the words really come from. He says, if you have envy and if you have strife and bitterness in your heart, those are the words that are going to come out of your mouth. So first we have to purify our hearts. The wisdom that is from above in verse 17 is first pure. So we've got to purify our hearts. Then peaceable, gentle, easy to be entreated, full of mercy, good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace. So I'm going to close on that note, because that's really the crux of the matter. Until we've purified our heart, we're not going to be able to speak the things that we ought to. If our heart is not pure, then when somebody issues a curse against us, we're going to respond in kind. We're going to. We have to first purify the heart. We have to have an answer ready in our heart for when somebody gets upset with us. You know what? The quickest thing to put out a fire, if somebody is yelling at you or mad at you over something, even whether it's your fault or not, you know the fastest way to put out that fire? I'm sorry. Have you ever tried it? I'm sorry. It doesn't matter if it was your fault or not. If you open with, I'm sorry, usually fire goes out. Almost every time. I've only had maybe once or twice in my lifetime that hasn't worked. But if you say I'm sorry two or three times, usually it works. Try it. It works. If you have your response ready, if you're ready to say something, then that's what you'll say. Try it. Try an I'm sorry sometime and see what that does when somebody's really angry at you and just spitting poison. It doesn't matter if it was your fault or not. Usually, that works. But the lesson is yours this morning. The issue begins in the heart. And so we've got to purify our hearts. We've got to make our hearts right before God, because without that, the rest cannot fall into place. So if there's anything that you need this morning, if you haven't been perfect with God, if you haven't brought grace to the hearers, then now's the time to make it right. Now's the time to change that. Now's the time to fix that. We have no guarantee of tomorrow. So if there's anything that you need at this time, let your need be made known as together we stand and sing the song that was selected.